KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is Madeline Brand on 89.9 KCRW. Time now for our weekly film reviews. And this week we have a dystopian action thriller slash political commentary and a no dialogue surreal comedy that follows a year in the life of a family of Sasquatches. Sasquatch Eye? Anyway, you'll want to stick around for this. We have Allison Wilmore, film critic for New York Magazine and Vulture, and Whitney Seibold is senior staff writer at Slash Film and co-host of the podcast Critically Acclaimed. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Okay, great to have you. All right, let's begin with Civil War, a dystopian action thriller. It stars Kirsten Dunst, Kaylee Spaney, and Nick Offerman.
19 states have seceded.
The United States Army ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The three-term president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
Let me know if you want to try anything on.
Are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
We just try to stay out. With what we see on the news, seems like it's for the best.
Civil War is written and directed by Alex Garland, who wrote 28 Days Later and directed Ex Machina, and it follows a team of journalists in the not-so-distant future covering the second American Civil War. Allison, tell us what this America looks like under the, I guess, dictatorship of Nick Offerman, who is president for the third time as rebel factions descend upon the White House.
Yeah, so the America of this movie is a mess, but it's also confusing. Alex Garland has really set out to make a movie that is more about all the contradictions and the difficulties of being a war correspondent and a war photographer in particular, than to be specifically a scenario about a realistic civil war that might happen, you know, in the near future here. What this movie is trying to do is sort of have things both ways. We don't understand the kind of political ideology behind the various factions who are fighting here. This is much more a movie about war itself and how horrifying it is. And in particular, it's about applying the imagery that we're very accustomed to seeing in terms of coverage of conflict in other nations and then bringing it to the US. So I found that a kind of provocative idea that, as is the case with some of Alex Garland's movies, I felt like a provocative idea that wasn't entirely filled out. You know, there's a kind of a lot of different scenarios that these characters were a group of four war correspondents heading to D.C. to kind of hopefully capture, to be able to document the fall of D.C., of the Capitol and of the president. The movie kind of uses a lot of ideas and buzzwords and sometimes like actual footage of protest and unrest from you know, recent years, while also kind of sidestepping, wanting to show any, you know, make any real commentary beyond the fact that conflict is bad and horrifying and dehumanizing. I was never bored during this movie, and especially the last sequence is like very exciting. And if you get to see this on IMAX, it is like this sweeping kind of like attack on the Capitol. But at the same time, I was very frustrated with it.
Right. Not wanting to anger one whole sector of the electorate, perhaps.
Yes.
Whitney, what do you think?
I agree with Allison. This film is incredibly aggravating in that Alex Garland just really is determined not to take any kind of political stance. He's not making any kind of commentary as to what brought us here or what the actual political climate was that brought, you know, America to a civil war in the near future. He's only interested in the war itself. And the conclusions he comes to are all incredibly bleak. The war is going to break out no matter what. And it doesn't really matter how the war started. As long as it's going on, it's just going to dehumanize everything. It's an interesting aesthetic exercise to see a lot of this footage that we see from overseas applied to American settings and how America is simply going to fall apart. Period. That's it. That seems to be the point of the movie. It's more about sort of capturing a certain kind of anxiousness and horror that the American public is feeling more than it is a real story about politics or war correspondence.
Okay, Civil War in theaters and wide release today. Next up, a film that was Pakistan's official entry for Best International Film at the latest Academy Awards. It's in select theaters this weekend. It's called In Flames, written and directed by Zarar Khan.
Go back,
right. In the trailer, a young woman is driving when a brick is thrown through her window. She's called a derogatory name. And the film is really an exploration of women's experiences living in Pakistan. Whitney, tell us more about the central character, Miriam.
She and her mother, Miriam is played by Ramesha Nawal, and she is fantastic in this movie. She is trying to weather all of the horror that is happening to her after the patriarch of her family dies. Because ownership doesn't go to women or daughters in Pakistan, they are now suddenly beholden to the desires of this off-screen brother-in-law that rarely interacts with them and might be threatening to take their home away. Miriam's mother, Fariha, is played by Bakhtawar Mazar. She is a little too trusting of the men in her life, and Miriam is trying to warn her away from trusting these men who don't have her best interests at heart. Meanwhile, she is out in the world being assaulted by men on the street. A brick is thrown through her window. There's a scene in the movie where she is asking for a prayer from this clergyman. There's this really gross close-up where he licks her hand when no one is looking. She's kind of resigned to all of this. She starts to have a bit of a warm relationship with this very shy man named Assad. He's played by Omar Javaid. And it seems for a moment that there's going to be a little bit of hope that there are good men in the world. But then a horrible accident changes that whole dynamic. And it's around this part in the movie when the ghosts begin to appear. There's actually a supernatural element to this movie where males begin appearing in the background of certain shots, where certain men who are in the room with them, their eyes go white and they seem to be sort of lurching at them in this threatening manner. This is a ghost story, and the ghost is the patriarchy. It's about how men are always targeting these women. It's really, really terrifying, really, really salient, and very pointed in a way that makes those, you know, horror and the horrors of the patriarchy seem like one and the same.
Allison, this is filmmaker Zarar Khan's feature directorial debut, and he's an alumnus of the TIFF Talent Lab. What do you think?
I really like this film. I think it kind of constantly surprised me. I love the way that there was a supernatural element. It wasn't something that was this overwhelming aspect it was braided in with all of these kind of immediate real life horrors that these characters are facing. And Whitney is right. It has some terrific performances, especially from the lead. One thing that I really appreciated about this film is that it really portrays the stress of not feeling like you can trust anyone around you. When the main character starts, you know, very tentatively dating someone who is genuinely, you know, a kind person, you can see just like how much work it takes for her to kind of open up to him, for her to trust him. It's such a big chance for her to go on a date with him just because of all of the judgment that would be weighed upon them. Even like smaller gestures from, say, a cab driver who offers her a free ride, from like every supposed gesture of kindness or offer of protection, these characters have very good reason to question, because so many of them turn around and become acts, you know, means of betrayal, or they become a way for the men offering these gestures of kindness to then ask for something and demand something in return. And like this movie is just really taught with the stress of that. It really shows you why it just wears these characters down. It leaves you just feeling constantly on guard, and that just becomes this exhausting thing.
In Flames in select theaters beginning tomorrow. Next, we have an unnerving movie for people afraid of spiders, an alien spider monster movie called Sting. It stars Aliyah Brown as 12-year-old Charlotte, whose cute, leggy pet begins to transform.
You hungry?
Cool. We're gonna call you Sting.
Hi, Eric.
Could a spider grow twice as big in a couple of hours?
No, that is a physiological impossibility. Sweet Jesus, what the hell happened to it?
Okay, Sting doesn't grow into a singer. He grows into a giant flesh-eating monster. Allison, what did you think?
So this is a movie that is set to take place almost entirely in this apartment complex in Brooklyn. And it's kind of this warren of you know, crawl spaces and neglected empty apartments and basement spaces that are very creepy. It's a great kind of usage of a space. It's the place you really don't want to be stuck in when you have a giant spider from space creeping around looking to snack on pets and neighbors and then eventually you. Yeah, I thought this film, it didn't entirely work for me, but I thought it had a lot going for it. In particular, it has some kind of nice family drama. The main character, Charlotte, who is a 12-year-old girl who ends up with an unfortunate choice of pet, played by Alayla Brown. It's kind of nice about just showing her loneliness and resentment as the older daughter in a household with a new baby. Her mother has remarried. There's a particularly nice, grim set piece involving an older relative who has dementia, who doesn't realize that she keeps calling exterminators who are then, captured by this giant spider. She forgets and then calls a new exterminator to come and go through the same thing again. And the effects here are done by Weta Workshop, kind of the famous New Zealand-based special effects shop. And they do a great job. The spider is very creepy. If anything, I just wanted actually a bit more of a balance between the family drama and the spider stuff. But there are times where I just wanted to kind of sit a bit more with the characters, in particular the main character who's, allowed to behave like a kid, which is to say to feel strong things that are not always fair. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted a little bit more of a bridging of the spider attack and her feelings. But that said, the spider is absolutely creepy.
Whitney, yes. This is obviously not the first, probably not the last, spider horror movie. There was the 1990 classic, Arachnophobia. How does it compare?
It's no Arachnophobia. Arachnophobia was, had that wonderfully sort of magical Amblin vibe to it. So when things started, mm-hmm. when all hell broke loose, it sort of built to a larger climax. Sting is much more modest. It's an Australian co-production, and Australian B movies tend to have a certain kind of an energetic verve to them. The filmmakers just love to lean into the mayhem, and this has wonderfully absurd mayhem. The spider does get larger and larger, and very luckily, the air vents in this apartment are big enough for people to just sort of crawl through. And then, of course, when it starts sucking the juices out of parrots and dogs and other relatives, all of the loving close-ups of the drippy corpses are just beautiful to behold. The spider effects are really the star here. Weta does an excellent job mixing some CGI, some puppetry, a lot of practical effects to make this starting small but eventually 8-foot spider look very real and menacing. The family dynamics, maybe they could have been a little stronger. I think Alayla Brown is great, but when you realize her character is named Charlotte after Charlotte's Web, it becomes a little bit thudding, a little bit obvious. But I'm okay with thudding and obvious when I'm seeing a clear kind of drive-in monster movie. And this is a very fine drive-in monster movie.
Sting in theaters beginning today. Finally, a film starring Riley Keough and Jesse Eisenberg, co-directed by Nathan and David Zellner. It's called Sasquatch Sunset. Okay, there's no dialogue in this entire movie. A lot of grunting and sniffing and some other stuff. Whitney, what's happening here?
Well, you summed it up. There's a lot of grunting and sniffing, and that's the movie. It's set out in the woods. It's about a family of Sasquatches, 4 of them, and what they do in the course of a year. They eat mushrooms and sleep and grunt and pee and poop, and they get horny and have sex, and they do grunting, filthy thing. Nothing happens in this movie. It is frustrating how nothing happens in this movie. I can see the filmmakers going for maybe some sort of absurdist comedy. The fact that the movie exists is the joke. We're going to make this dialogue-free film about Sasquatches, and we're going to hire famous actors like Riley Keough and Jesse Eisenberg and put them in Sasquatch suits, and I imagine have them improvise and cavort around the woods and try to pass this off as a movie. The problem is, eventually we have to watch the movie, and the actual result is completely not funny, completely not entertaining. It has maybe a few comments about sort of the harshness of the natural world or the encroachment of mankind. That's one of the big plot points in the movie, is humanity begins to work its way deeper and deeper into the woods, invading the Sasquatch's ecosystem. But, you know, that's not really the point of the movie. The point of the movie is to chuckle at Sasquatch penises, which there are plenty of in the movie. They really want to show close-ups of those things. It is aggravating. It is obnoxious. I kind of hated it. It's a chore to get through.
Oh my gosh. Allison, maybe we should take mushrooms before we see it. What did you think?
It definitely feels like a movie that is meant to be seen through the haze of some, you know, some substance, you know, to enhance the experience. I did not hate it as much as Whitney did, but I do think it's a really thin premise on which to hang a 90-ish minute feature. Towards the end, I think it almost like sweeps you up into something, for me at least, that felt a little poignant. But there are whole stretches before then that just feel like a little self-congratulatory. Yeah, like a little much, like, just look at what we did. Can you believe that they let us make this?
And dress up in weird hairy costumes.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Sounds like a delight. Sasquatch Sunset in select theaters beginning today. And that does it for this week. Allison Wilmore, film critic for New York Magazine and Vulture, and Whitney Seibold is senior staff writer at Slash Film and co-host of the podcast Critically Acclaimed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.